as I get closer to where he went off the road, I see a big black shape in the middle of the road walking. So I have to slam on my brakes and try to swerve myself because this thing is walking in the center of the road. Because I don't see a head and I don't see arms. I just see a really big, tall person, like big, thick legs and a big, thick torso. And they're moving very funny.
But to be honest, I wish I had have seen some of her vulnerability. I wish I'd have seen her in that space so that I would have language.
And he says, no. That's not why you're angry. That's why you're mad. Mad is on the surface. Mad is a surface emotion. You're angry. And anger is deep. That cuts to your soul. You are an angry young man. And I couldn't answer. I then had come to realize over the next course of a few hours, I'm musing to myself, and I realize I've been a victim my whole life. That's why I'm so angry. And over the course of the next 19 months, this man changed my life. He helped me to realize about processing emotion and how to forgive myself and forgive others. And that's where the metamorphosis really began for me. And I learned how to, I'm a survivor, right? I know how to survive.
I was understood for the first time in my entire life. And when I read those things and I learned, quote unquote, those things about myself that I had known forever, but never really had the semantics for, I couldn't unlearn them. Like I heard this quote years ago and it resonated with me so much. And it's like, you can choose to look the other way, but you can never again say you didn't know.
All right, welcome to the Verbal Echo podcast. Today I have Jessica. Jessica has graciously decided to come on to the Verbal Echo and tell us about her many experiences she's had over her life. I'm going to let her go into all of this, but I think we'll start with her home. Well, maybe her non-home state. Maybe home state. I don't know. What would you call it?
Reluctantly my home state.
Right. On the East Coast. And so you've been having a lot of these experiences since childhood. And I'll let you kind of go into the first one. And you know what? I do want to, we're going to circle back to this, but when we were trying to connect, Jessica was having a lot of technology problems in logging onto this call. And so I just want to mention that we're going to come back to that because she's going to talk about her experiences being mostly with technology. And we're going to circle back to that. But let's start with some of your let's just say I'm not surprised that that has happened. And so let's start right with some of the earliest childhood experiences you had.
I'll set it up just a little bit. My grandmother was a housekeeper at, it used to be one of the founders of our town. It was one of their mansions. So it was a like 11 bedroom, beautiful mansion, but it was turned into a bed and breakfast. And my grandmother cleaned it for 25 years. So the owners, they lived on premises and they were on vacation, so it was closed. So my grandmother had to go there, do the final clean, and then, you know, take stuff out of the garden and, you know, pick things so that they wouldn't rot during that week that they were gone. So I'm this big girl of five and I'm like, I'm going to help her clean. I'm going to do this. And I didn't want to ask her too much because then she might as well have just done it herself. You know, I wanted to be the big girl. So it's the top floor. They each had private bathrooms for this town. It was built in 18 something. So for each room to have its own private bathroom was really, it was pretty advanced. But on the very top floor, they had a men's and a women's bathroom right next to each other. My grandmother told me to go around and pick up all the garbages out of the room, just gather all the garbages. So I went in the women's bathroom, and then I go in the men's bathroom, and I'm a little kid, and I think, I can't go in the men's bathroom. I'm a girl. So I wanted to ask my grandma if I should go in there. So there's a maid staircase that comes up the side, and I hear footsteps. So I think my grandma's coming up. So I open the door, and the staircase turns a corner to the left. So I keep hearing these footsteps. I'm like, grandma, grandma, grandma. And I keep hearing the footsteps, and nobody's actually coming up the stairs. So now I'm getting scared and second guessing myself. And I'm like, grandma? And it's not my grandma. And the footsteps are getting closer and closer. They're they sound like little footsteps. I don't know, like light footsteps. So I just back myself against the wall, and this thing starts moving faster up the stairs until I just closed my eyes, and it reached the top of the stairs, I guess, and it was gone. But I smelt something, and it just smelt like garbage. And I was like, oh, maybe it's the garbage that I grabbed in the hallway or what, I'm trying to explain it away. So I get out of the staircase and close it, and I just back up against the wall because I don't know what to do. I'm like, I don't know what that was. And there's a window right there. And I look down and I see my grandma in the garden picking, the vegetables and stuff out of there. And I was like, oh my God. And I just stayed there until my grandma came back 15 minutes later. And she's like, oh, did you get the garbages? I was like, I didn't know if I could go in the men's bathroom. She's like, oh, I'll get them. And I never mentioned it to her at all because I couldn't explain it. So I don't know what I wanted her to say. So it was not until my teen years till I said, grandma, I wonder if I could go stay at this place and at the Victorian. And she said, I want to stay on the third floor. Those rooms have their own bathrooms. It's so cool. She goes, oh yeah. A lot of people say it's haunted up there, but I ain't never seen nothing. And I was like, and so the thing is, that was like first validation for me that someone else has had some sort of experiences there. And yeah, that was my first real kind of visceral thing that happened to me. My other stuff is really just kind of been electronic issues, lights.
Yeah.
Technology.
So let me ask you a couple questions. So when you smelt that smell about the garbage, where exactly were you? You were at the top of the staircase. You were
I had walked down probably because the stairwell, it's a maid staircase, so it's really narrow and steep, and it went down and to the left. And so I couldn't see around the corner. So I went down a few steps thinking I'm going to meet my grandmother up there. And I'm calling for her, and that's when I didn't hear her. And I just stood there, and the steps kept coming and then started coming faster. So I just backed myself up against the side, maybe three or four steps down, and just kind of, just closed my eyes. I don't know what it was. And it was after that, it was like a wind, like a whoosh, and it looked like a vapor.
What other shape did it have? Was it just wispy?
It was body shaped. Like, yeah, like you could definitely make out like a head or something. It was small, but not as small as me.
Mm-hmm. They have feet.
That was
did
it.
You see the word in
no,
the
like, it just, it almost like it just went down to mm-hmm. the stairs. And to be honest, I wasn't like really looking there. I was just like, well, yeah, I was just so confused as to what it was because it kept coming. It wasn't just standing in one spot because I heard the footsteps, but I didn't see anything. And I was like, what is that? You know, that all these things are going mm-hmm. through my head, you know? Is it smoke? Is it?
Right. Yeah. You're trying to make sense of it as a child. Did it have a,
yeah.
You said it was, it was, what kind of color was it?
It was white, like, like a little, like a human-shaped fog, you know?
So you could kind of see through it.
Oh, yeah, you could see through it. It just looked like smoke in the shape of a human.
Yeah. And you mentioned that was your first validation. Someone that you had some fear about mentioning it to your grandmother. And yeah. Why do you think... Okay, here's a philosophical question. Why do you think these things appear to children a lot?
Because we're not, we're just open. I don't think that we have formed any opinions on whether spirits or ghosts are visible or we could see them. Like, that hasn't really been brought up to us. So we don't even know that that's a thing. We haven't had discussions about it and formed an opinion. So if something just presents itself, you're not conditioned then to dismiss it as something else, I think. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's got to be the reason, because it's just kind of innocence. You know, you're not, we don't have anything against that, you know. We don't even know what it could be or not be. We don't know that's a thing to talk about, I think. So I just, we have the ability to be open and to accept all things and to see that.
Yeah, that's really true. I think so. So when did you first feel comfortable talking about it as an adult, or what, I guess, what age? When did you first mention it to someone else, if you kind of kept it inside?
I was probably a teenager, like I was 15, because, you know, I was in the alternative group of people, you know, kind of punks and goths and stuff. And I thought, okay, this is a safe place to say something like that. But when I'd say it, they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, yeah, well, you know, like I backed away from it because I didn't want to. I already got made fun of all, but I didn't need that, you know? So I remember I had told my boyfriend, and he didn't believe in that sort of thing. But he was there when I asked my grandmother if I could stay there, and she mentioned that, and I looked at him like, I told you, you know? So that was the first kind of like, other people say it? No way type of thing, because I don't know, it's an old house. I've lived in many old houses. Pipes make noises, things creak, whether you're moving or not. There's things in the walls, you know. I didn't know what it could be. I'm sure, you know, overactive imagination, or, you know, combined with that aspect, I could explain it away. But all right, think about it. I was like, there's no way.
Yeah. And we do that as an adult. We go, oh, well, maybe it was just my magic. Because we're told that by adults who we look up to. And then we're like, oh, yeah, you're probably right. And you second guess yourself. And then you start making an alternative story. And then when you get to be a little bit older, you go back to it and you go, no, I really trust myself. Or hopefully you can get back to that place.
Well, because it's uncomfortable, because there isn't nobody, unless somebody said, you know, like everybody that ever stayed there was like, oh, yeah, that's Beth. She's always here. That ghost. Like, it's just, there is no there is nothing concrete that you know of. You have to just kind of assume what you think it is, what it could possibly be. It's just one of those things, I think, that, you know, some people just refuse to believe stuff like that because to them it falls under the, that's too weird to be true, so it mustn't be, you know. And, you know, lots of people have had all kinds of experiences that don't ever, you know, express that for fear of that, or to taint how they're seen in the eyes of whoever it is, or the public, or whatever. So I think a lot of people just kind of dismiss it and move on, you know.
Also true. Yeah. Did your grandmother ever mention any other things, like in passing, that maybe she might have felt comfortable to you speaking about, like after that little passing comment?
But she didn't believe in ghosts. Either she just didn't want to think about it, so she just would say she didn't believe it. But she would offhand make comments about things that happen in this house. And you're like, what? Like, that's okay. But you can't discuss the reason, because she doesn't believe that that's the problem. And, you know, it could be the wiring or whatever, but if it only does it for you, then I don't know, maybe you want to rethink it. But sometimes it's too scary for people to think of the unknown, things like that. So it's not like these things don't happen to the people who don't believe. It's just that they're not going to acknowledge them, you know. A lot of it had to do with lights turning off for her when she was in rooms.
Right.
Lights.
Yeah.
Lights. Lots of lights.
So a lot of electrical things. Yeah. And knowing about this, the Victorian hotel, have you heard any other stories? Have you been able to find out any other things online about other experiencers at that place?
No, nothing specific. Just mention of it. It was a bed and breakfast for many years, and lots of famous people had stayed there. And then it was sold to a private owner. So it's a, you know, personal residence now. But when it was first bought, they asked my mother if she were to clean that place, because, you know, her mother had cleaned it for 25 years. And she said she would. And they asked her, we just want to know, did you or your mother ever see anything paranormal in this house? And my mother knew I had told her as an adult at this point. And my mother said, no, we haven't. So
that's interesting that you say that, in reflecting that someone had also asked that question of them. So obviously they saw something, and so they were searching for validation.
Yeah.
And because they hadn't really seen anything, you know, maybe they had some disturbances, but they hadn't really seen anything, but those other things could have been easily explained away, then they had to honestly say, no, we really haven't. And then that person who was asking that question just went, okay, I'll go find someone else to validate me, basically. I think we do that. Yeah. We look for validation.
Yeah, these people, you can imagine. I mean, so my grandmother spent obviously a lot of time there, because it was a bed and breakfast and they served dinner and things like that at different times. It was a restaurant with the bed and breakfast. And, you know, my mother started cleaning it, and, you know, she was there often, obviously, but she didn't live there. Now, these people bought the place and are now living full time in this massive mansion. If anybody's going to see something, it's probably someone like that, because they're open. They didn't just dismiss it. They're open to the possibility of some sort of entities there, because she asked some almost virtual stranger if she or her mother had any experiences themselves, you know? So I'm thinking that it wasn't just, hey, we're about to buy this house. Have you guys ever had any weird experiences? I'm guessing they probably had had some experiences at that point. But my mother doesn't believe in that stuff. So she didn't even entertain it. So she didn't even ask them. And I was like, oh my God, you didn't ask? Because I really wanted to know myself, you know? About what it was.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, here's my thought process. And now I was sitting here Googling the name of the show that was super popular on Netflix for years. And gosh, now I'm gonna have to find it. But basically, I wanted to speak to, you know, back in the 1800s, 1700s, like prior to like even the mid 1900s, I would say post 1980s or whatever, being a housekeeper was a highly respected career. It was almost under household management. And so many people made careers out of being like, if you were the head housekeeper of an estate, you were highly respected, well taken care of. You managed an entire staff. You were seen as basically, it was a household manager position. And so you managed so much. You managed the staff, you managed the coming and goings, you knew everything that went on in the household or the estate. You were well respected.
Right.
And often you had that career for your entire life. And mm-hmm. sometimes you even died there. So,
right.
I think it's and only now do we think of housekeeping as a menial job, and that has changed because the everyday man can now hire a housekeeper for 3 hours or whatever.
Right, it hasn't held that prestige as it once did.
And it was very prestigious.
Like the maid's quarters in this house. They're unaltered in structure. Of course, they were updated with like modern stove and refrigerator and, you know, but the rooms and things like that were unaltered. And that was really big for the head housekeeper. It was the whole back portion of this house. So to go along with what you said, this wasn't a multi-bedroom to stuff like 20 housekeepers in. This was the head housekeeper staff, like just her, that's where she lived. So
a lot of times
it was big,
right? Yeah, a lot of times the staff, they lived on site. They were given homes on the estate. Like this goes back to in Great Britain and and I'm totally drawing a blank on that show.
Well, they
but I watched the whole series. Yeah
they have a carriage house. There's a carriage house, a 2,000 square foot carriage house too, and an old English greenhouse that's like 2,500 square feet or something. It was these mansions in this town are just unbelievable. Inside, they were just beautiful woodwork and, you know, walnut and granite and all kinds of stuff. So I would go there every chance that I got because I just really love the history of it. But yeah, you always kind of, I did, even especially after that experience, I just kind of felt watched. And my grandmother must have just had to put it out of her mind because she was often alone, this 5 foot woman in this massive house to clean it. You know, I can't imagine she didn't have more experiences mm-hmm. that she never told me. She just wasn't. She wasn't going to entertain it, you know.
Right. She wasn't
because it was scary. I don't know. Like, who knows? Maybe she just thought it was stupid, or maybe she thought it was just kind of. There was no answer, so why would she tell me? She would want to scare me or whatever. So mm-hmm. she never said anything to me.
I found the show. It's Downton Abbey.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I could, that's that show I could watch again. It was so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I know my friend really loves that show.
Oh my
too.
Gosh. I even have the Downton Abbey cookbook.
Do you really?
Yeah. I got the Downton Abbey cookbook. It was so fun.
What'd you make? you make
nothing yet. But yeah, I told my mom that I had the Downton Abbey cookbook because she's like, oh, can I borrow that?
Like, what does it have in it? That
well,
that,
Mrs. like... Cadmore's, like, all of her special recipes and, oh gosh, like pastries and like puddings and roast meats and vegetable dishes. And so basically,
are they ever simple or are they like really in depth? Like
medium, it's classical English cooking, so it's very rich. And right. I'm sure that the food was just amazing. But anyway, sidetrack. But I just thought that was really funny. I was like, "What is the name of that show? I can't remember the name of that show," and now I remember. So
and I was no help. Sorry.
Yeah, and anyone who has watched that show, they're like, "Oh, I know what she's talking about."
Yes, yeah, they're yelling right now.
Anyone who has not watched it, I would highly recommend it. It's a super fun show to watch. And I think there's like 7 or 8 seasons or something like that. And then they came out with 2 movies afterward.
Yep.
All great. I just love that historical period.
I know.
Documentary type movies and stuff.
I looked at a lot of the linguistic aspects to the shows and the production, the back end of it, and how the, you know, set design and the costume design lined up. I kind of like to see those things. But
it's super fun. Yeah. Well, let's segue into the next historic hotel that you had experiences with. And this one might touch on more of this electronics, electrical experiences that you had. So set the stage for that one and how that came about.
All right. So I was, surprise, surprise, an assistant housekeeping director. and I was in the basement, of course, because they always put the housekeepers in the basement. So it's under the ground type of basement, like deep, 2 stories deep under the streets. And it's very old. It's like, I don't even know how old now, 150 years old, something like that. So I am downstairs. I worked the swing shift at that point. So I was getting out that night at 11. So there's a, I don't know how to set this up. So the office is narrow, comes in from one end. You walk straight back and there is a door on either side and an office straight ahead with the door to that office more towards the left. My desk is on the right, like before those doors. Does that make sense? Okay.
And so I just want to mention, this is in Colorado.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Colorado. So I'm down there and I'm working on the computer and there's a light switch outside of the director's office. And it's the type of switch that when you turn it on and off, it's difficult to move. It's a click. Like it's not one
like
of those
toggle.
Flimsy.
Like yeah, a toggle.
It's one of those thick switches, thick bubbly. It's probably in the 40s they put this in type of thing. You can tell. It's got some girth to that switch.
Right. Everything made in the 40s and 50s, like you couldn't break it unless you took a hammer to it. And now nowadays things break when you look at them. Or they break before you get them out of your car after you buy them at the hardware store. So
maybe they're already broken.
Picking up what you're putting down.
Exactly. And so I sit down and I'm trying to make the schedule for this next week. And I hear click and the lights. Everybody was at lunch at this point, or dinner, I guess. And it was a skeleton crew in the evening. The laundry wasn't going. Nothing like that. It was just the housekeeping department and they all had gone to dinner. It was probably like, I want to say like 8 o'clock or something. But I worked till 11. So I'm
I'm down there and I hear this click and all the lights go out. Pitch black. I'm like, what the heck? So I thought somebody was like, you know, messing with me, hiding in the director's office. And so I get up and I'm like, turn it back on. And I look and there's nobody there. I sit back down, click. Again, I'm like, okay, all right. Like, I don't know. There's the door open, the side door. I don't know. I'm trying to figure this out. It's never happened to me. I turn it on, I sit back down. Now that light and the strip that has my computer off. Now it's pitch black in there. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, this is it. Like, I don't know. I turned it back on. It turned back off. And it was audible sound. Like, everybody, I was just standing there with my hand on the up switch when the rest of the people came back from lunch, and then it stopped doing it. I don't know. Like,
how long did this go on, like, a time period, do you think?
I'd say, like, because it'd wait, like, a little bit. It'd wait, like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, and then it would turn off again. So I'm like, is this on a timer? Maybe it's on a time. I was just thinking at first, one, someone's joking with me. Then I was like, oh, maybe when it happened again, I was like, oh, maybe it's on a timer, you know, because maybe once it gets late at night, they have them on time. I mean, that really is kind of improbable, but that's what I'm thinking, because it just keeps turning off. And I was sitting perfectly still. I thought, well, maybe it was motion sensor or something, but it wasn't.
So yeah, you second guess yourself. Like, yeah, you just second guess yourself.
I went on for like 15 minutes, like just kind of an audible click. Like, it wasn't the motion sensor kind of a light. It didn't have that on there. That's not, you had to physically move it up, and it was not easy to turn on. So I don't know. But yeah, once they came back, it didn't happen again.
Did it ever happen again when you
no.
were? Okay. And then you had some other experiences there too. You mentioned some lights in hallways or something. You were making rounds.
Yep. This happens to me frequently in different scenarios. Lights will just go out all the time. Happens to me with street lights. My own lights will just burn out, or come to find out it isn't screwed in all the way, which I don't know why, because I put them in, and who screws it in kind of halfway, but it will flicker and go out like somebody unscrewed it. Yeah, lights in the hallways would, as I go underneath them, you know, they're set distance apart going down this hallway, and as I go under them, they would flicker or go out. Sometimes they'd come back on, sometimes they would not. It's almost like you could watch me atrium style walk around as the lights go out. Like, just really weird. And that place, it's known for this sort of thing. Lots of people, guests, housekeepers, lots of people have seen lots of different things there. But yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot of light. For me, it's always seems to be lights and noises or static, or the radio turns on. Or
I've had many of those experiences as well. This is a great point where I want to segue into this. So episode 22 on this podcast, I interviewed Rafael Lugo Skits. And go back and listen to that episode. I think it's about 3/4 of the way through that episode. He talks about, and he's an experiencer, highly recommend checking him out and listening to that. So he's an experiencer. He works with MUFON. And
after his experience, the MUFON investigator asked him if he had experiences where he was walking down the street and street lights would go out, or if he was walking down a hallway and lights would go out. And basically, this woman who had been assigned to him to take his encounter and offer feedback and document it, and then she also counseled him on what he has experienced and how it relates to other reports that they've had, is that this is a common thing that happens with experiencers lifelong, that they are very tied to electronic disturbances. They can affect electronic things in their vicinity, in the rooms that they're in, or the hallways or the streets that they're walking in. And she gave some advice as to try it out. Just say, light turn off, or light turn on, or I don't know. It was really fascinating listening. I just recently listened to that episode myself again, and his account is truly amazing. Yeah, he talks about that. Maybe there's some resources out there. I was trying to Google some other information about that, and I couldn't find anything on a quick search, but I'm sure that there's some more information out there, or maybe connecting with that organization or a similar organization, that they might be able to offer some information on that. So yeah, it was really interesting.
Because it's really interesting, I think, because as adults, like we've talked about, you try to explain these things away. Like, you know, oh, maybe these street lights are on timers, or, but I'm driving in a line of cars. Why does it only go off when I'm underneath it? Like, you know, I mean, I have stuff wrong with my phone all the time. And I'm sure everybody's like, oh, yes, just send her phone. You know?
And we couldn't get connected. I sent her a Zoom link this morning, and your computer crashed.
Well, it's working fine now.
Yeah. Computer crashed. Phone crashed. Headphones wouldn't work. Headphones wouldn't connect. This stuff. So, and I find it interesting. And I know a couple of the other podcasts that I follow along mention this also. Frequently is that whenever we talk about these certain subjects, like there's always some kind of a tech issue that happens. It's almost like there's a invisible hand kind of saying, hey, hey, hey,
right?
We're here. I think that's really interesting. Right. I've had a lot of electronic experiences that happen even, you know, just a few days ago. It's just, I was looking up Raphael's episode, and I just popped open like my podcast streams on RSS, but I also feed to, you know, like Spotify, iTunes, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I have Spotify on my phone because I don't want to have all those apps on my phone, because it's just like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to cut back on my tech use, right? So I don't have like the apps on my phone. So I'm looking at Spotify because I keep that one up. I use that all the time. And I keep clicking on my podcast, and the app crashes it happened 4 times. So when I was, Jessica probably saw me looking down at my phone. I'm like, I'm trying to get my app to open up, and it keeps crashing. And this morning, I was streaming doing a little online course that I'm taking on yoga ethics, actually. And so I was trying to stream it. I just wanted to finish up it's like a little 3-hour course. It's really fascinating. Talks about philosophy and Western colonization of yoga. And anyway, so I was like on lecture number 2, and I was listening to it while I was doing the dishes. And the app kept crashing. I couldn't get it connect to my speaker. I finally had to put my headphones on, and then it crashed. It's like, what is going on with my tech? Right.
It seems to me, I feel there's a connection. Just when I try to think of all of the scenarios in which this sort of thing has happened to me, it seems to, I'm wondering if there's a connection between my desire for this thing or my intent, maybe because my energy is directed towards it or because I'm excited about whatever it is. But whenever I'm like, oh, I can't wait to watch the show, and it won't load, my internet has problems right then. And it ends up like,
yep.
I mean, Netflix will always do that to me. Mm-hmm. When I want to watch something, it will just
happen
be
to
like
me. Last night I was trying to watch the rest of I can't remember the show. I was oh yeah, no, I just couldn't remember the show name. It was anyway, I was watching this show, wanted to finish it up, and the app kept crashing on me. I'm like, oh, they make these things so that they die after a couple of years. I'm gonna have to get a new Roku device, you know. But it's been happening.
But see, mine, like, I've had mine forever because, you know, I don't really use it that often. It's because your intent for it. Like, when I'm excited about something to happen, my computer's working fine now. It's doing all of the things. But when I tried to join this video call, all of a sudden it froze, needed to be restarted. And that happens with everything. I'm on a phone call. My phone will freeze, go into diag mode. It always says that. My headphones won't connect. It drops the call. My phone dies instantly when I had 50%. All of a sudden, it doesn't. And it seems to be because, I don't know, whatever right then I'm excited about it or whatever electronic I'm interacting with right then is picking up that energy or something. Because why would my computer be fine now? Well, because I don't need to use it now.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Because it wasn't imperative that I use it. So I'm wondering if there's a connection between something like that, you know, like if your app was just playing something in the background that you didn't care so much about, would it have done the same thing to you? You know,
all good questions. And the more I do this, the more I look into the abyss and don't know the answers. And so maybe that's why I'm, you know, it's so funny. This might be a really good mention. Oops. This might be a really good point to mention. I'm going to release this episode before I have a few more episodes that I'm totally dedicated to the people that I interviewed last fall, trying to get those episodes out. I did decide to transition this podcast into what I'm passionate about, and that is talking about these experiences with other people. I have some really interesting guests coming up that I am searching for, and I want to hear from anyone who wants to tell their story. And I hope to create this brave space for people to come on. And a lot of these experiences, there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of disbelief and people discounting your experiences. And I want to be a space where people can come on and talk about this stuff safely. And I think as more and more of us are comfortable talking about this, and we're only going to get more comfortable if we just do the thing, right? We just talk about it. And so my hope is to do what I'm passionate about, and then this podcast will grow because I want to do this. Like, I think about this stuff constantly in my day-to-day life. Yes, I'm passionate about other things in my life, but one of the things that I'm really, really passionate about is these topics. And,
well, I think that I wonder if people hearing this, as you talk about these things, they're going to go, hey, that happens to me.
Absolutely.
You know, and because a lot of times they might it gets dismissed, but you talking about and other people hearing these experiences, they might, you know, take a second look at their own experiences and, you know, look at them in a different way. It's like, huh. I thought that was just me, you know. I'd be definitely.
I've heard some statistic.
Stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard some statistic. Can't remember where I heard it. Totally drawn a blank. I heard some statistic, and I don't know. With statistics, I take those with a grain of salt
And so it's probably a made up statistic, but I heard somewhere that 8 out of 10 people have had some kind of experience. And the word, when I say experience instead of story, because experience to me is a more validating term. If you can put a term on any of this stuff, we'll call it paranormal, parapolitical, para whatever, whether it's experience that you had out in the woods camping or an experience that you had doing housekeeping in a creepy old house on the East Coast or here, you know, it's still an experience. It's something that you had a personal encounter. And so I want to talk to people. I want to explore this and maybe I'll make some sense out of it. And maybe I do have some selfish reasons. Maybe I want to make some sense out of this for myself, and I will probably die and never know the answers. And that's okay.
Well, I think it's also just validity and community. If it makes anybody else feel better about themselves and having had these experiences, then you're doing something good. Because I don't know how many times it's, say, your friend mentions that they do something, you go, oh my God, I do that too. You know, it's that sort of understanding and acceptance that, I mean, you know, it could have been something that you just keep dismissing, but it keeps happening to you and you are trying to be like, God, it must be me. There must be, you might not know the answer, but to know that there are other people that these things happen to, there is some comfort in that, you know, it just is. So we can all be in this group of people whose phones die for no reason and have to go buy new ones, and your headphones are always breaking, you know?
Yeah, like, absolutely. And I think that the more we talk about this sort of thing, the more things do happen to people. And I don't think that that is something that you need to be scared about. I think it is them, and I say them because I don't know what they are, but I think they notice that you are noticing them, and then they are like, oh, they get it. Maybe we are opening up a safe space for both sides by talking about these experiences.
Acknowledging.
Yes, we're acknowledging
that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be just your energy that, you know, how many times it shows when people just get really, really mad and all of a sudden lights are bursting. And even though that's a dramatic effect, that does happen a lot. Whether you think you're like, wow, maybe that's light, happened. It was just, it's time to go out. But
I've had that happen to me. Yes, I'll share this. Right. Yeah, no, I had a really terrible boyfriend one time.
No.
And, oh, yeah.
No way.
And there's a big shocker, right? No. So I had a really terrible boyfriend one time. I was really mad, you know, like really angry. And I was, let's just say I was angry. And kind of
really, really mad.
I was really angry. And no, this was a boyfriend. And temporary short boyfriend. And I was really angry because that person was very, just kind of a bad dude. And yeah.
Sorry.
And a light bulb, my kitchen fixture that was wired into my ceiling exploded and glass went everywhere. So I just mentioned that because we are made of energy. We are energy. And so when you have so much energy that you affect your environment on the outside, this is a real phenomena. And it obviously it comes from me. So we are energetic beings. And so these things do happen. And I think that was a wake up call for me. And then very soon after that, I started to explore like, okay, I'm out of control. I need to control my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions, because this is affecting not only other people, but my environment in a very physical way. And so that's when I started to go down the go down the path of, you know, meditation and mindfulness, and just very early on. And I started to notice a huge impact on my life and how I feel about my energetic body. And so, I just wanted to mention that was a personal experience. So, I mean, these things happen, you know, and you can go down the path of, oh, I'm ashamed, or you can say, okay, this is just a point in my life where I need to realign and make some changes for myself.
Just acknowledge that it wasn't like you were like, you know, light bulb break, you know, it's just something that happened because of the energy surrounding you. And this isn't even anything like, it wasn't like, I mean, hey, it could have been, but it wasn't like some spirit decided to smash the light bulb, or they could.
Oh no, I knew it was me.
But at the same time, like, but yeah, there are those, but that's why I'm saying it's not really all that like far-fetched or anything to assume that these things happen, you know? I mean, there's static electricity all over the place, you know? I mean, but some people just, I mean, you feel when people say, oh, they're enigmatic, you know, like you feel people's energy and their pull and their, why couldn't you feel something that's, oh, that person's not good or they're bad? Like you can feel that. I mean, that's an atmospheric thing, right? Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have another question before we land this. And I hope you're comfortable with this. It's a little pop-up question. So a number of years back, you really dove into your faith,
mm-hmm,
and you made a huge transition into going through conversion. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could talk about that and the meaning of that and how that has impacted your life. And if you felt like having any of these experiences influenced that, and if you noticed any kind of synchronicities in your new faith.
I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, half my family was Jewish and the other half was Catholic. So although there are lots of things surrounding the Catholic faith, I never felt any sort of acceptance through anything like that. It was kind of like we don't talk about that. Judaism is much more spiritual and they openly talk about spirituality. I think as a religion, it's more feelings based and for me anyway, and you know, the humanitarian part of it, it changed my point of view on things and how I approach people and things. It also aligned with me because I'm also a very open person. But coming from that, it made it a safe place for me to be comfortable with the things that happen around me, I believe, instead of some sort of guilt or shame that was surrounding my Catholic side and why they were just like, oh, I don't know, there's something like that. I don't know anything about that. You know, they instantly just shut that down instead of exploring it, like in my Jewish faith, or just at least listening to you and being accepting of it. I definitely see, I mean, we have a strong Catholic influence in this area. And there's also lots and lots of history here, obviously. So lots of things happen that people just say off the cuff and instantly dismiss. Oh, yeah, and I say that place on it. I don't know about that. Like, right in the same sentence. So I think it does play into, I mean, at least that plays into a lot about talking about it and acceptance of it. That's interesting.
And just from what I know, I think this is almost hypocrisy and hilariousness. The
Christian faith is very paranormal.
Yes. It's
the whole thing is, I mean, you have a prophet that reincarnates. I mean, come on. That's,
well, it's all
is a ghost. Okay. I mean, so, and then, I mean, right? I just think it's hilarious. And but that there's so much. Now, I'm not saying all avenues of the
no, Christian, but on a whole, it's like I just watched something on the Salem witch trials, and although it's Puritans, it was so strict there that, you know, that environment enabled what happened to happen. And I'm not saying that those girls were actually possessed, because don't underestimate the power of teenage girls.
Right.
You know, but that environment, because they were so stifled in that, those things, they could pretend to manifest those things, and that scared the Puritans. And that was the environment that allowed that to happen. So when you stifle a lot of stuff like that, then it manifests itself. It gets louder because it's like, we are here. You know, these things are happening because right. You need to be able to express that and be free about it and don't make it so scary to talk about.
And I just want to bring this up because I have studied this quite a bit. The whole concept of witchcraft is a misogynistic women's persecution.
Yes, they're just women.
Men were afraid of women, healers, herbalists. Yes, I'm not saying that there aren't bad people. There are bad people all over the world and have been from the dawn of time. There are bad people who use things in a bad way. So that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the good people who were healers and people who used natural medicine. And quickly, men, and I want to say this with a grain of salt. I'm not saying all men, okay? I'm saying the history has shown that women were feared. They did not want them to have too much power. And so they began persecuting them and calling them witches. And If you look into the accurate history of where witchcraft came from, it was female persecution and control. Hang them. We don't want them to get too much control, or, you know, and
fear out of something that they don't know either. It's different classes of people that instantly fear something that doesn't align with them. I mean,
yes, it's going on today. It's a dawn.
I know
this has been going on. It is timeless. And if it's not, it's marginalized groups, marginalized communities, mm-hmm. Whether it's racism or if your skin is brown or you have, there is a suppression of anyone who might get too much power. And now it's political.
That they don't know, you know.
Exactly. It's happening.
And that's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fear of what we don't know. I was just going to say it's happening now with disclosure. And there are people in control in politics who do not want other people to talk about what they know. And so those people are being persecuted. Just look what's happening with all of the... efforts in UAP disclosure. There is so much suppression of actual evidence, and they're still trying to say nothing to see here, folks. This is just swamp gas. This is just, it's your imagination. Like the whole drone thing that happened over the East Coast, it was happening all over the United States, and the US government came out and said, hey, nothing to see here. This is just a bunch of hobbyists. Bullshit. Okay.
It's just so pejorative.
Bullshit. I saw a drone a quarter mile from my house back when the drones were going on. And I look around, it hovered near me and flew off. And I did get a video of it, a terrible video, because my camera was broken at the time, which
That's another issue. I need a new phone. But you know, so the so this thing was hovering near me. It hovered near me. It was about, I want to say, like maybe 100 feet in the air, and then it took off. So
How big was it?
It was like maybe a 18 inches
small dog.
Why?
Small 18 cat.
Inches, 18 inches around, 24 inches around, 2 feet at the most. So immediately I climbed up the hill. I was walking my dog. I climbed up the hill. I look around. I don't see anyone. I see no one. There was no one there with like a hobbyist controller. Yeah, no one.
It could have been a long range one, but why?
Could have been.
Why?
Well, we have a military aircraft repair facility near my home. So
that's,
I don't
not
know.
Creepy at all.
I don't know. Right. I live near a military. I see Black Hawk helicopters fly over my house. They're thunderous when they fly. Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, you say all these things, then you're like, yes, yeah, we have a Area 52 now near my house.
Right.
Like,
exactly,
you know,
right.
Just saying.
It's okay. It's okay. nothing to see here, folks. It's all fine. Yeah. Just keep on doing what you're supposed to do and just ignore what we're doing over here.
Well,
so.
And that's what they say when somebody questions something, somebody you know, or a friend, or somebody who's an electrician or whatever, will state something that sounds like it's plausible, and it could be plausible, and they don't know, but they're just putting it out there, and then people go, oh yeah, it was probably that, you know, like, oh no, it's probably had, you know, these old houses with the light switches. And you're like, most people would be like, yeah, I bet it's that, but I know a little bit about electrical work, and
exactly,
I know a little about it, and I question it and go, no, that's not what it was. Like, I let them, I'm not going to argue with them. They weren't there. I know what it was like, but I'm like, that was not that, you know, but people want some sort of an answer because they don't want to have to think about it. Some people don't like philosophical conversations. If they ask a question, they want an answer for it. You know, like, not everybody likes to ponder the what ifs, you know? So,
oh, no, I love to ponder the what ifs. I'm all about the creepy. And that's why I'm going down this giant rabbit hole thing.
Yes.
Conundrum. It's a giant conundrum. Can't even talk. Conundrum. Puzzle. That's where we're at. Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. I want to thank you, Jessica, so much for coming on here. We're going to park this car. And I hope to have you back. Park this car.
You're gonna park
the
car.
I'm gonna park the car. Yeah. My linguist. Yeah, linguist. Can't ever have a conversation with a linguist. I'd be like, actually, it's this. You're saying it.
You didn't
wrong.
Say that accent correctly. Let me show you how it's
actually this. And where did? What is your accent? Because I don't even know what. You're just a soup pot of all different kinds of language dialect. Like, go take a class somewhere. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. So yeah, we're going to park this car. And thank you for coming on.
That one.
That was bad, wasn't it?
So yeah, it was really bad.
You say it.
We're going to park this car.
Okay. I'm going to stop. Thank you, Jessica.
For sharing. Thank you.
And coming on. And I hope to have you back on again. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Hey, thanks for listening to another great episode. Be sure and like, share, or follow this podcast by leaving a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. If you have an experience you'd like to share, be sure and reach out to verbalecho@gmail.com. If you know someone who'd like to tell their story, please send them our way. I want to talk to them. No guardrails. Have a great week, friends. See you in the next